Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're excited to have the amazing DJ production team known as the Angry Kids this week. They're releasing a new CD called The Angry Kids Present The Hit Fix, and we're talking all about it, including their new single, We Could Be Lions. We're also joined by author Vicki Fraser talking about her new book, Dear Bully of Mine, a fantastic read for kids to understand how important self-esteem and self-worth are to give them courage to stand up for themselves and others. Smart shopper Solmez McDaddy is here with fall shopping tips, and Patrick Charles drops in to talk about how much money artists really make.
Capture your need for sound.
We're very happy to welcome back to the show Ryan and Jeff of the Anchor Kids, an awesome production team who remix great music as well as produce their own. The guys are here to talk about their latest project called The Angry Kids Present The Hit Fix. Boys, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly.
Thanks very much.
So we're obviously very happy to have you back on the program. And can you tell us about your latest adventure, if you will? How did it actually come about that you would be releasing this remix CD?
What happened is when we made the deal with Warner to do our album, one of the big things was that, you know, the show was growing and what we did on the show was growing and people really liked it and they wanted a way to bring it home. The unfortunate thing is when you're making a show of that nature and it's you know, it's on the air and it's not for sale, you can really do whatever you want. So, you know, it was a process to bring it home to everybody, but it's just something that seemed that the public wanted, just based on perception and response.
How did you guys go about choosing which songs you were going to include on the CD? Because I'm looking at the track listing now, and it's a melting pot, if you will. Like, Icona Pop's on there, Cody Simpson, Jason Derulo, Porter Robinson, like, just a bunch of people. So how did you decide to do all that?
Well, for me, we started off by just running through the stuff that we were playing on our shows that we really enjoy playing, things that sounded great on the air. Things that, you know, resonated with Ryan and I, and you know, we started with a fairly long list and narrowed it down based on what we could get, and that's kind of what we came up with.
So when it comes to the same point we were talking about, is, you know, when you're playing in a club or you're playing on the radio, you can play whatever you want, but when it comes down to clearing what you have to clear to make an album, there's always a delicate line of what you can realistically get and what you would like to get, and I think we were able to pretty much get everything we wanted, save for a couple brand new things we're playing and a couple artists that don't clear compilation tracks, but we're really, really, really happy with what we have with this.
Is it a tedious process just for, you know, people again listening who might not understand the fact that you have legal channels that you need to go through to clear all these things? So is that you that's handling it? Is it Warner that's helping you out with all of that?
I worked alongside the team at Warner Brothers to get everything done. I have a history of working in that label space. That's where I came from initially before Jeff and I started doing our business. I worked with them, and it was a long process. Outside of, after, you know, clearing all the music, we had to go back and get approval for everybody to let us release what we did to their music, and save for one party that we won't even speak of. Everybody agreed to let us do whatever we wanted, so it ended up working out. And also in the end, we did get clearance. For the first time for a Canadian artist, we are going to be able to release the entire mix as one single solitary track on iTunes. Usually when you go on iTunes, you know, you have to have a la carte of each individual track. So if you buy the album on iTunes, what you will get is each track we use to make the album in its entirety. Mm-hmm. And as a bonus 18th track, you'll get the entire DJ mix as one long play song.
Oh, okay. That's awesome. And so, because I think it's important that people that are listening realize, like, you know, a CD like this doesn't magically come about. Like, there's obviously, like, lots of hard work, you know, behind that. And when you guys are releasing these remixed tracks, do you really have to think about, you know, a song's speed and all that sort of stuff? Like, can you mix a slow song into a fast song or make it into something? Like, do you really have to think about all of that as well as you're choosing things? Or can you,
Jeff, I'll let you handle
mix
that.
Everything?
I'll take that one. Yes, very, very, very much so. We give a ton of thought into every single song we play. We're always paying attention to tempos and keys and transition points and how long of each song and how the chorus and the vocal and the verse vocal fall, and and you know where we can mix in and mix out. And yeah, we spend probably 80% of the studio time just doing kind of preparation before we actually even get to mix anything. And I mean, that's the one thing that we kind of have always done, is that we put, you know, album detail into our shows every week. You know, what people don't know is that, you know, we don't just roll into the studio and play the show and it's done. You know, we've spent 4 solid days in the studio beforehand getting things ready for the show. And definitely we spent even more time on the album to make everything, you know, Angry Kids level detail for sure.
Now, is it still the fact that you guys are obviously still in different cities, right? Like Jeff, you're in Calgary and Ryan, you're still around Toronto.
Yep.
So you're still working through internet sort of thing, and you guys still have all your gear, I guess, identical from afar, if you will?
Even more so now than before.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep.
I also wanted to talk
about... I had a few pieces I was missing to match Jeff, and he picked up a couple new ones just to annoy me, so I could go get those too.
Very nice. Now, on the new album, you also have an original track called We Could Be Lions. What's the biggest difference working on your own music as opposed to remixing someone else's?
The biggest difference when you're remixing someone else is that there's you know, there's already an existing piece to adapt. You're sitting there and you're listening, you know, you're listening to a song and you have an idea of melodies and ideas of, you know, the way the drum patterns were and the way you would like to change what's there already. When you're working on an original like this track, you kind of just sit there and go, let's make something. And while you're making something, you want to think, okay, if it sounds like, you know, A or B, you say to yourself, yeah, I can't do that. But when you're remixing, it's going to sound like something already. So you're basically adapting it.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show, Ryan and Jeff of the Angry Kids. Make sure to check out their website, theangrykids.com. It seems, or it's not seems, this is fact, that, you know, a lot of production teams, DJs, they're hooking up with strong vocalists, sometimes vocalists that we know, sometimes people that we don't know, to release, you know, awesome tracks. Just like, for example, one of the songs that you have already on your album, Armin van Buuren's This Is What It Feels Like, you know, working with Trevor Guthrie. Do you guys have a dream artist that you would like to work with on an original track?
I do, but I don't think it's possible. My dream artist to collab with would have been Jeff Buckley, but he's dead.
Yeah, I was going to say, that might be hard. I was waiting for you to say Michael
Jackson.
Yeah,
that's Jackson. A bit of a hard thing to overcome.
Jeff, is there anyone that you'd like to work with?
It's hard to say. It sort of changes for me by the week. Yeah, but right now I don't know if I really have anybody. If you hadn't gotten the impression already, I'm a bit of a detail freak, and I'm not sure there's anybody right now that could tolerate my level of crazy.
That's awesome. And what is your perspective, though, on, you know, whatever DJ, if you want to say Calvin Harris or Getta or anyone else that is sort of high in the public's sort of consciousness right now, do you appreciate when they go get someone that's sort of not that well known, or, you know, is it better when they go grab like an Ellie Goulding?
For me, I really don't care who does a song. I don't care who owns it. I don't care who's recorded it. I care if it's good. So if it's an unknown vocalist or a known vocalist, definitely when you see, say, Calvin Harris featuring Ellie Goulding, or, you know, an example I'll give is Deadmau5 featuring Cypress Hill. When you have that known entity, your expectations get higher. And, you know, on the Calvin Harris, Ellie Goulding, you know, a collaboration, I would say something I really like, where the Deadmau5 and Cypress Hill was something I found a tad disappointing. But on the flip side is, you know, his one with Gerard Ray and with Rob Swire are completely amazing. So the unknown ones definitely lower the bar a little bit and take you by surprise.
Yeah, because I have to say, like, I really like Alex Godino and Jordan's track. I think it's amazing. And I never saw that one coming. I just never even thought Jordan would hook up with Alex Godino, because isn't he based like out of Italy or something? So I didn't even think... That was
well, what you've got nowadays is, you know, publishers are actively shopping songs by their artists to different companies all over the world, and they have vocalists, and, you know, Jordan, I'm sure, has a publishing deal, and someone might have had a song he didn't use, or whatever have you, or else, you know, either way, Alex Godino's people might have been shopping a song he had that needed a vocal and shopped it to his people, and he was able to say, hey, I can do a vocal on that. There's such a network of things floating around. And that's actually how we ended up with We Could Be Lions, is someone solicited a song and we said, hey, we like this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And was it a long process to do We Could Be Lions, like, or did you bang it out fairly quickly?
No, it took us, what, about 4 months?
Yeah, something like that.
That's awesome. I love the detail because I'm a type A person as well, so I appreciate all your efforts that you guys are doing. And so this leads me to my next question then. If I've counted correctly, I count that there's 17 tracks on the new CD. So how long did this project actually take from start to finish to put together?
This is where it gets tricky. The entire album to get done actually took us a year.
Okay.
Yeah, from the time we started choosing tracks, you know, Ryan and I talking about it and, you know, working on the label end of things to get the ducks in a row, yeah, it was about a year ago. From the time that we actually, you know, had the final list, okay, this is approved, this is what we can do, now we can sit down in the studio. I mean, that kind of comes together a little bit quickly because we're used to working a little bit efficiently when it comes to that, but definitely the bulk of the time was leading up to actually mixing.
And do you guys have, again, I know you're in different time zones and all that sort of stuff. So do you guys have better days and times of the week where you guys bang stuff out? Or is it like every day that you've got to make time for each other?
Well, we talk all the time. You know, albeit I'm not going to call Jeff at, you know, when I wake up at 6 in the morning and it's 4 o'clock at his end. I know that he's usually at his desk with a coffee around 9:30. I give him 15 minutes to drink it before I annoy him. Any point during the day, we may be apt to text the other one and say, hey, I need to talk to you real quick. And, you know, it could be, you know, midnight my end, but I'll say, oh, I'm in bed, or, hey, let me get up and I'll give you a ring real quick. And we always make sure the other one's available for the other within reason.
And what's up next for you guys? Because obviously this has been a big project, and the project last year was great. I just have to tell you, my favorite song is Monkey off your first album. I love that song. So what's up next?
We've got some more music we're working on. And I think I alluded to this earlier, is the initial plan is to do a 4 or 5-track EP that'll come out top of 2014.
Of original music, the asterisk,
yeah.
Of original music.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, also in 2014, worked towards another Hitfix album, and also maybe by, I don't know, we'd say the end of 2014, but I think we're being adventurous, maybe 2015, a new artist album.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Very good. And what do you want to tell people that are listening right now? Because we not only have our Canadian people listening, our Montreal people listening, but there's lots of people actually listening from overseas in Australia and Singapore. So any message for them as they learn about you guys?
Just, you know, explore the music, give it a listen. And most importantly, if you want to buy it, some of it may be restricted to Canada. So just order yourself a Canadian iTunes card on the online and enter it into iTunes, and you can buy stuff without territory restrictions.
That is awesome. Jeff, Ryan, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciated having you guys back on the show, and good luck.
Thanks so much.
That's Jeff and Ryan from The Angry Kids. Again, make sure to check them out on their website, theangrykids.com.
I know you wanted something with your bow and arrow cutting at my heartstrings. As I'm saying hello, now my head ain't thinking. That makes me worry. I knew it from the get-go. Knew you'd get me freaking trying to keep my head low. Ignite the fire of passion in our eyes. We
that you need and all I want. We could be lying, we could be tied, we could be alone. We could be lying, we could ignite a fire of passion in our eyes. We could be giants, we could be bad, we could be strong. We could be lying, we could explode all that you need and all I want. We could be lying, we could be tied, we could be alone.
As many children head back to school, one big issue that continues to plague our kids is bullying. Our next guest is the author of a new book called Dear Bully of Mine. Vicki Fraser is an elementary school teacher and mother of two. Her book is geared towards children to help start a conversation about bullying. Vicki, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what inspired you to write this book, and was it a long process?
Well, every year and pretty much every day in my classroom, I talk to my students a lot about treating each other with kindness and compassion and respect. And the whole piece of writing started from, we had a day to celebrate, to get kids thinking about the National Anti-Homophobia Day. And one of the things that we did in our grade 6 class was we looked at different video clips from the media about how people feel when they are bullied for many different reasons. And after the students looked at the video clips, I asked the students to do a writing activity, and I myself did it with them because I think it's a good idea sometimes as a teacher to put ourselves in our students' shoes. And I just put together this poem and then put it away, you know, in my writing folder, and then worked on it a little bit more and pulled things apart and added things to it, and then ended up coming together with this piece that has turned into a book now. So that's where it all came from.
Why did you decide to gear the book towards kids in grade 3 to 6, sort of? Why not older? Because, like, I know, for example, in the job that I do in media, like, we always hear all the time that it seems to be more the teenagers that get into trouble with this.
I think that, like everything, you really want to try to reach students as young as you can. I think that if we bring up students to be kind, compassionate, caring children, then they grow into kind, compassionate, caring adults and young adults before that. And so I think it's important to help them to develop the kind of people that they want to be before they have so much of the pressure of all of their peers around them, and also just trying to fit into the groups around them. So if they're young and you can reach them, that's something that they will then carry with them through life.
In your estimation, or your thought process, or your actual experience, because you do teach in an elementary school, how big of a problem is bullying in elementary schools, do you think?
I think it is a humongous problem to the people that are being bullied. You know, unfortunately, we have heard more in the news about these things that they're calling bully sides, children who just can't take it anymore. And so I think that even if it's one child, if it's one child who takes their life because of things that are going on with them being bullied, then that's one way too many. So I'll be honest with you, I really look for it at school because I want to do my part as a teacher. I don't see tons of it. Sometimes I see teasing and things like that, and so we try to handle it right away before it escalates to become something that I would call bullying. But I think for those few students that really feel it every single day, it's a humongous problem. So is it happening absolutely to everybody every single day? No. However, even if it's one in a class or one in a school, that's one too many. So we have to work on that.
Do you think that bullying, whether it's, I mean, I think I can answer this first part of the question. I think bullying has gotten worse since social media has come about. But in elementary school, do you find that that's an issue too? Because obviously I know in high school, you know, all these kids are definitely on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. So I can see where that would be an issue right away. Do you notice a social media bullying problem in elementary school?
I think absolutely. I think, you know, you just look at, even though things like Facebook, you're supposed to be, I think, 12 or 13 to be on it. I mean, some kids have Facebook accounts their parents set up for them when they're like 5, and then they grow up with that. I also think that, you know, in the past, if you had a child bothering you at school, well, when you got home, you sort of escaped that. Well, that's not so anymore, because when children go online at home, all of a sudden it can continue. So some of this bullying that they used to be able to escape by coming home continues into their home. So, yes, I definitely think that I think the web is absolutely amazing, but I think also in some ways people are abusing it, and it is causing some problems.
What do you think teachers and administrators and parents should be doing more of when it comes to bullying? Because, like, honestly, talking to you, I feel like you're, I mean, I know there's more getting involved, but I feel like not everyone is on board yet with the bullying.
I think a big thing is definitely listening. I know that even with my own children, the second they say, "Mom, I'm not feeling good about this," or "This person did this today," you know, I don't assume right away, "Oh, okay, somebody's being horrible to you, they're bullying." But I do think, okay, there's something going on enough that this child is talking to me, so I really need to listen. And then after I'm finished listening, I need to ask some questions, and then something has to be done. It doesn't necessarily, and I don't think it should always be right away that, actually, I never think it should be just jump in to punish somebody, because I don't think punishing does that much. I think we need to find ways to teach students. And children all make mistakes. Every single child makes a mistake. That's part of growing. That's part of learning. Our job, I think, as educators and as parents, is to make sure that when mistakes happen, that there is learning that comes from it. So I think really what we have to do is listen to our children and then find a way to work with them so that if something horrible happened, it never happens again.
Do you think bullying actually happens, like, as you are teaching, or do you think it happens mainly in the hallways, mainly on the playground, mainly through social media?
It's a really interesting question you're asking, because I actually asked my students that last year. I said, you know, is it something that, you know, is happening right, you know, when I have my back turned, or is that? And the students told me that real bullying, not just teasing, but real bullying is usually done when no adults can see it. So I think it does happen in the hallway more when nobody's around, or out on the playground when they're not right next to a teacher, or in their home behind a computer. But I do also think that, you know, just by not including somebody all the time or ignoring somebody all the time, every single day, that can be a form of bullying too, that feeling of exclusion that a child might feel every single day. And that is something that I think that does happen in class sometimes, and that's something that we have to look for. I always speak to my students about how, you know, we really are a family and we have to watch out for each other. And if you see that there's somebody who hasn't found a partner and who isn't working alone, that's somebody who you want to invite in, because they're your family and we take care of our family. So things like exclusion, maybe some of that happens in class, but most bullying, I think, happens when adults are not right by the students.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is author of Dear Bully of Mine, Vicki Fraser. She's also an elementary school teacher. Were you ever bullied as a child?
I wouldn't say I was bullied. I think I was like every other average kid out there that, you know, definitely there were some times I was teased. I was very fortunate, though. I had two parents who were always had an open ear, and I came home to, and there was lots of love in our house. So if I did have a concern, I could talk to them. I think almost all kids are probably teased from time to time, but I think bullying is so much more. I think when a child doesn't want to come to school anymore, really it affects their life. That's a whole different level than just a little bit of teasing.
You are a parent, as we have discussed, also an elementary school teacher, so you are really seeing both sides of it, which I think most parents don't get, because, you know, not everyone's a school teacher. How quickly should a parent jump in or not? Because I also wonder, you know, how much does the kid need to sort of figure it out on their own. You know what I mean? Like, so that they're not, because then I feel like bullying might even be worse if they think, oh, you're a mama's boy, your mommy's always coming to rescue you.
Well, that, I think that's the biggest thing, is that there should be always an open conversation at home. I think that, you know, we are so rushed and there's always, you know, practices to bring kids to, or homework to be done, or baths to be given, or all kinds of things. But I think just as much as every single night we make sure our kids eat supper, I think every single night there should be some downtime where all it is a conversation between the parent and the child. And it doesn't have to be an hour-long conversation. It can be a 5-10 minute conversation. And it's not just how was your day, but asking those questions, you know, how are things going at school? You know, who did you hang around with at lunch today? Is everybody getting along okay? Is there anything that's bothering you about school that you want to talk to me about? And at first, you know, the students, the children might say, no, everything's fine. But I think that if they're really upset and they need help and they're so used to this daily conversation, that things will come out. I know it has, even with my own children. You know, sometimes I thought the day was fine and then we're having that conversation at night and then all of a sudden, well, wait, something went wrong today that wouldn't have come out unless we were having this conversation. So I think it's really to open up the doors and have that talk with your kids. I also think that it's really important for us to teach our children as much as possible to deal with their own difficulties. And what I mean by that is not to say, oh, well, good luck, deal with it. I mean, really sitting down saying, okay, so this happened. What could you do? How can we handle this? I think they're also having said that, though, there are some times when the parents do have to step in. I mean, for sure, if ever something has gotten physical, where a child could physically get hurt, if something has happened several times in a row, or a child has been going through something for a long time, for sure, the parents need to get involved right away. But I think it's really one of those things where it depends on the situation and how the child is feeling and how much, you know, the parent realizes, oh, wait a second, this is something that the child absolutely cannot handle by themselves. I need to get involved, and then that's what they need to do.
I suppose my next question is going to ask you to sort of put on your hat as a teacher. It's, you know, speaking for fellow teachers, I think, because again, I'm not sure how things work in your particular elementary school, but I'm assuming there's a similar feeling across the board with teachers. Do you think as a whole that you teachers would appreciate more support from the administration, more support from the community, more support from the parents, so that you can really make a difference and shut this stuff down?
You know, I think that we could always use more support. And having said that, I think always that, you know, students are overwhelmed and teachers are overwhelmed and parents are overwhelmed and administrators are overwhelmed. But what I do think, I don't think I would necessarily think that I need more support. I know if there is an issue that comes up, I can go see my administration and talk to them seriously, and we will find a way to make sure that things are taken care of. I also feel that way with the parents that I work with, that, you know, if something arises, that I can contact them and we can work together as a team. I think, you know, in general, looking at all schools and all teachers and administrators, I think that the whole thing is just finding that time, making that time to really work together as a team. Because I don't think you need more support from one specific area. I think we need equal support from all the people involved. The parents, the teachers, the administrators, and the students. I think we all need to work together. And I think the students play a big role in it too. I keep on trying to tell my students, you know, you can really make the difference about somebody feeling great every day in school, or somebody having a horrible day. And the simple thing could be by including somebody in a group, or if you see something going wrong, going to get help. So I think it's just having everybody work together as a team. That is the most important thing.
What would you want a kid out there right now to know who is being bullied?
I think that I would want them to know that definitely they are not alone, that they may feel like they're the only person who has ever known that pain, but trust me, I have worked with lots of kids and there are a lot of children who have been through really hard times. I think that they also need to know that they need to ask for help. They really can't, if they're having a hard time and things aren't getting better, then they need some guidance, they need some help. And if they ask for one person and that person does absolutely nothing about it, they really need to keep on going until they find somebody who does do something about it. Because I know there are some students who feel like, oh, well, I went to tell somebody and they didn't do anything about it. I really think you have to keep on asking for help until you get it. And that's really, really important. And also, you know, to find somebody that they trust and speak to them, even if the incident is dealt with, make sure that they always have that go-to person.
Wow, I think that's great. Now, where can people get a copy of your book, Dear Bully of Mine?
The easiest way, I think, is to order it online from the publisher at www.domnizelles.com. That's DOMNIZELLES.com. You can also get it at Babar Bookstores and at Indigo Laval and Chapters Point Claire right now.
And if people want to learn more about the book, do you have a Facebook page as well?
Yes, there's a Dear Bully of Mine Facebook page, and as well as the Dom Nizelles Facebook page. And I also just wanted to mention, too, that the book is coming out in French as well. It was translated by an amazing teacher, Catherine de Merly, and we're really looking forward to having the French version out as well.
Awesome. Vicky, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it, and good luck with the book.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Take care.
That was author of Dear Bully of Mine, Vicky Fraser. Again, for more information, check out their Facebook page, facebook.com/dearbullyofmine.
Capture your need for sound.
It's always been tough to make money in the music business, and it's not getting any easier. We still see videos with champagne and Lamborghinis, but do we really know how much all of these artists are actually making and people involved in the industry sort of in and around them? Joining us to talk about all of this, our great superstar, our social media expert, Patrick Charles. Patrick, thanks for happening and being on the show with us this week.
I'm always happening.
Exactly.
How you doing?
So, you know, why is it so tough to work out how much money is actually being made in music? Is it because there's all these different entities and people involved and people grabbing it?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because you know what, it's like it used to be just music and now it's like a whole business. Like, it's not so simple as just like, oh, I write some songs and people buy my records and they come to my concerts and I get rich. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, well, how can I diversify?
Right.
And that's what everybody's doing.
And I guess, like, in your estimation, is a lot of that revenue coming from concerts now? Because I feel like I don't know how much they're actually making off their records.
See, the problem is a lot of it is coming from concerts, and you're not making that much off of records for a variety of reasons. But I mean, I'll tell you, we probably talked about this before, but you know, for instance, somebody like Tina Turner, right?
Mm-hmm.
When Tina Turner was happening after Private Dancer, when that album exploded in the 80s, she toured like crazy because she had basically no money coming in from the actual record.
Wow.
And that has to do with a variety of reasons. First of all, that, you know, nobody gives you like an amazing record deal if you're an unproven artist, in a sense.
Right.
So even though she'd been around for a long time, nobody was going to say, oh, this album is sure to sell a lot of copies. Nobody knew. So they took a chance. So basically, she didn't get that much up front. And also, not being a songwriter, that's major. If you're not a songwriter, I mean, there's very little coming your way.
So I have a question then with regards to that specific point that you just made and Celine Dion, because as
sure.
you and I both know, she writes nothing, or I think nothing. I don't think I've ever seen a Celine Dion written song.
Not so, here. She writes checks.
Yeah.
Yes.
To Renee to stop gambling. So where is she making her? Because she seems like she has sold a gazillion albums. And
sure.
Is she making money from that Vegas show? Is that it?
Well, she's making money from that, but she's making money from other concerts as well. And she is getting some mechanical royalties off of the albums, because I mean, an album that says Celine Dion on it is going to sell to that segment of the population who loves her albums. And so the record company, knowing that, will pay her because she is a big name.
Okay. Okay. And so in your view, then, the basic main revenue for an artist is coming from what?
Yeah, see, even that's an amazing question, because it's crazy, right? Like, you look at somebody like Psy with a Gangnam Style.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how much money he made off of, you know, recording the song? How many copies did it sell? You know, did it sell a million copies or did it sell 50 copies? We don't know. But the thing is, with all of those billion YouTube views, mm-hmm. this guy got paid for appearances. He went all kinds of places. It was like, you know, turn up here for $50,000, turn up here for $10,000, turn up here for $100,000. So the story was that he made like 8 million bucks off of that song,
wow.
Which is crazy.
Wow. And he was showing up everywhere.
Absolutely.
I believe even at a Madonna concert, he showed up.
Yeah.
So do online services like, you know, iTunes or Pandora, do they pay as much as they purport to?
Yeah, see, they do and they don't, because the problem is they pay the money to the record companies and they pay the money to the people who actually own the copyrights of the music, meaning basically when you record something, the record company usually owns it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's who the check actually goes to from these companies, from iTunes, from Pandora. So it's easy to say, like, Pandora puts out, like, these press releases, and they say, you know, people say we don't pay out enough money. We paid Lil Wayne $3 million last year. That's what they say they've paid Lil Wayne in performance fees, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know how that money is split between himself, the record company, and also – this is another sort of a subcategory, but I mean, in a lot of music, you're using samples of other old songs,
yep.
And people are getting paid, like estates are getting paid, and like all kinds of different people are getting paid because the song uses a sample. For instance, MC Hammer Can't Touch This, right?
Mm-hmm.
To make an old example. I mean, that was using a Rick James song that most of that money had to go to Rick James' estate.
Right. Okay. So they have added expense. It's not just their magic.
That's the thing.
Okay. Now, we sort of briefly touched on this, and I guess I wanted to expand it or explore it further. What are some other ways that these artists are making money then, if it's not just coming from the album or concerts?
Yeah, well, it's crazy because there's tons of stuff. There's lists of different things that they can do. And I mean, first of all, there's the standard stuff of like merch, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go to a concert, the t-shirts, it's like, wait a minute, how is a t-shirt $50?
Right.
I don't understand.
Uh-huh.
Because it says your name and this year and a bunch of cities, it costs $50. And I mean, bands are selling more and more elaborate merch at concerts. Any shows you've been to recently, you know, especially for sort of bigger bands, you'd be amazed. I remember when, you know, when I was a kid, it was only like t-shirts and the program from the tour, basically just a little booklet of some pictures from the tour.
Mm-hmm.
And then it started to get into like nicer, like denim shirts or something, you know, and then it was jean jackets and you thought, wow, that's pretty sophisticated. But now it's leather jackets and all kinds of different crazy things you can buy. And even bands are selling like an experience of going backstage to meet them.
Right.
A lot of people are doing that. They're selling that for like, you know, a VIP package for $2,500. And there's also like, I mean, that, and that's the sort of obvious, simple stuff. There's also things like the YouTube Partner Program, which means that YouTube rolls an ad before your video plays and they throw a couple of pennies your way every time it gets watched.
Okay. And I wanted to bring this up because I know this is from back in the day, but I'm wondering if you know if this still goes on. And it came to mind just because a few days ago I saw this. I belong to a couple of Facebook pages, I guess, that are Janet Jackson heavy, if you will. And someone had posted a video of her, I guess, around the Janet era. So that's the 93, 94. And she did a commercial in Japan for cell phones.
Of course she did.
And like she, and it was, I have to give her props because she learned like at least four or five Japanese phrases, like not just words. Like she wasn't just saying the cell phone company. She said a few, and she was like nailing this Japanese accent and stuff. And I'm like, she must have got paid like $10 million for this.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, you know what, that before the internet was as big as it is now, stars used to do it all the time because nobody would ever hear about these commercials.
Right.
But now you can just YouTube basically anything. And that there's a term for that, and it's called Japandering.
Well.
Yeah, that's, you know, because a lot of artists will say like, you know, after the first album didn't do well, I decided to just, you know, take some time to myself and reflect before I made the second record. Then you find out that they were actually, you know, the album was big in Japan and they did a whole bunch of ads for like, you know, a chewing gum company and a credit card company. And they made money that way because you can make, you know, people make millions doing that kind of stuff. But they never talk about it in the U.S.
Yeah. And I think like if we were still in the age where we didn't have YouTube or any of these avenues to see what was going on, like I would have never seen this commercial. And I probably would have never seen I know she did one a few years prior to that when it was the Rhythm Nation era. She did one for Japan Airlines. I guess it's JAL.
Sure.
And so she did like, you know, her and her dancers were kicking up a storm in the like Osaka like airport to escapade. So, and she's not the only one. Like I've heard of Brad Pitt, like all these other people. So I guess if they can go overseas and make money, they're doing that too.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, people do that kind of stuff all the time. But there's so much more. I mean, there's like even click-throughs they get paid for. You know, like people have links for iTunes, right? You can buy the album. If you go to somebody's website and you're a fan of them and they say, oh, you can get the album, you can, you know, pre-order or whatever through iTunes, they get a cut of that as well.
Wow. And
or, you know, send to Amazon.
Are the details of any of these deals public knowledge? Like, I know we just sort of figured out about this Japanese stuff, but like, can any, like this other stuff that's going on, is it aware to the public?
No, not really, because people try to hide it and everybody tries to pretend they're rich just from, you know, how great they are of a singer. Okay. But in reality, I mean, people are working and they're sort of turning themselves into corporations.
Oh, okay. And, you know, you just quickly mentioned, and I wanted to bring this up with regards to the merchandise stuff, like especially if it's a younger band like One Direction, they must be selling lunch boxes and armbands and everything else they can possibly come up with. Okay.
Yeah, because I'm going to tell you, those guys, I don't believe they're making like a nickel off of those albums.
Right.
Just because of the way the industry works. I mean, there's no reason for them to be able to walk into a meeting and say, well, you know, we want to make, you know, 80 cents per download or something like that. There's no way they can say that, because I'm sure the label will counter with, well, we'll change one of you guys and you'll be just as popular. So we don't care. So they're in no position to negotiate anything. Okay. So as, outside of that, the label says to them, like, listen, you guys make all the money you want to make, do whatever you want to do. Because what happens is the labels normally don't touch any of that stuff, any of that merch or anything that you sell, unless you have what they call a 360 deal, which means that they get a piece of everything. They get a piece of the concert, they get a piece of the t-shirts, they get a piece of the records, everything. But if they don't have that, I mean, they can basically go and make, I mean, I go into a bookstore here and I see like One Direction bobbleheads, and I see, you know, One Direction pillowcases, and that's where that, that's where the money is for those kinds of artists.
And final question for you, if you take a gander back at, let's say, the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, and where we are now, do you think artists are better off now or better off then?
I think it's the same story. I think that what happens is there are some people who are doing super well. I mean, you know, the sort of music community reflects society in the sense that there are some people who are doing fantastic and some people who are doing lousy. Okay. And I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, it's just a question of how far you're willing to go and how much you want to do to, you know, stay in the industry. So I think that there are some bands that just don't make that much money and they're okay with it. And then there are people like Beyonce who want to have like a cell phone commercial, or you know, Jay-Z with his Samsung deal with his album. It's very important to them to be top sellers in any way, shape, or manner, you know. So it's all about those big appearances, and it's all about doing the right placements to make people think you're more important than you actually are.
Okay.
So to answer your question, I think it's probably about the same ratio.
Perfect. Okay. Patrick, thank you. As always, I find this fascinating, and I know our listeners will too. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is our social media expert, Patrick Charles. You can learn more about him on our website, kellyalexandershow.com, and also follow him on Twitter at GetPatrick.
kellyalexandershow.com.
As summer comes to a close, it's time to look forward to the upcoming fall season. As everyone heads back to school or settles back into their work week, it's also time to keep an eye out for any amazing shopping deals that can still be had. Whether it's for a birthday gift, a home improvement project, or a wardrobe upgrade, there are many different ways to find a deal that works for you. Solmaz McDaddy is our smart shopping expert, and we're very excited to have her back on the show. Solmaz, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly.
So to start off, you know, most people are sort of back at school now. Are there still back to school shopping deals going on, like that, you know, where the retailers are still trying to entice you because maybe you didn't get that laptop yet, or maybe you didn't get that calculator yet?
Well, that's a good point. How do you bring up the laptop? Because if you're in the market for a new computer or a new laptop, Mac is having a great deal till September 6th. It's the back to school special. They have a deal every back to school for students. Every time August, September, that's when I bought my laptop a couple of years ago when I was a student and got a great deal. And so if you need a laptop or a computer for that before September 6th, you will get $100 credit on the App Store. And if you're wanting to buy an iPad or an iPhone, because we all know people are walking around with tablets a lot nowadays, they're so easy to carry and whatnot, you can get a $50 credit to the App Store. So that's probably the best deal that's still ongoing for now. And then you'll probably need internet access for your laptop. And so if that's the case, I'd probably say that some of the best internet deals are for back to school. And it sometimes works even if you're not a student. So if you're not a student, they'll give like a special 8-month promotion where you get a lot of download, and that can always be good. And if even if you already have an internet provider, which most of us do, you can still be shopping around and call up your internet provider and say, well, look, the competition is offering this deal, I'm interested, and they often will match the price.
Something I wanted to ask you as we sort of march through September and then head to October, I suppose some people would think that this might be a quiet time of year before the holiday rush when it comes to deals and so on, because, you know, I think a lot of people do their, you know, back to school shopping in August and early September and all that sort of stuff. But I was wondering, there must be some deals that go on with retailers who are trying to get rid of summer stock, like whether it's a lawnmower or summer shorts.
Well, that happens. Summer deals happen in July. So early July going up till end of July, they'll be trying to get rid of their summer stock. So at this point, you might still be able to get a deal, but they might have sent it off to the warehouse. So if you want to go out in the outlets, you'll probably get crazy, crazy deals for summer stock or other types of, like you're saying, a lawnmower. But sometimes you won't even be able to find them. For example, bathing suits, sometimes they can be hard to come by when you're not in season. So depending on what it is that you're looking for, you might be out of luck, or try a warehouse. An outlet.
Okay. I wanted to ask you if couponing is really worth it, because I think there are some people that are like intent, you know, coupon people, and I think it works for them. But if you're like a fair weather couponer, does it still, you know, help you out?
It for sure helps you out. I mean, any dollars in your pocket, if you're not handing it out to the retailer, is helping you out, right? So I would categorize myself as a fair weather couponer. I'm not a, what do you call them? Crazy coupon.
A crazy coupon is hardcore. Yeah.
I don't have the booklet with the categorized sections and all that. I do have a friend, however, that does do that. But you have to ask yourself, is the time worth the investment? And it might be for you, depending if you're single mom, soccer mom that's having to say every penny counts, and that's totally fine. That's really, really worth it. However, I'll come buy coupons and I'll snag them and I'll keep them in my wallet. And if it's the yogurt that I happen to buy, well, when I'm paying with my credit card, I just take out the coupon and boom, a dollar in my pocket. How easy is it to save?
Mm-hmm. Right. Smart. Okay. So you should be on the lookout. You don't have to go crazy, but it's good to sort of be aware, I guess.
Absolutely. Or even before you enter a store, sometimes they've got those coupons at the entrance of the store, whether grocery stores, or I know we've got Canadian Tire here. You can just look to see if there's a special deal on, and if there is, well, because it's not always indicated. Unfortunately, the tickets don't always show the right price. So I always kind of scan to see, what do I need? Is there a great deal on? 70% off, boom, sold.
Gotcha. Now, when it comes to shopping for clothes, what are some ways to get a good deal? And is now a good time to be clothes shopping?
Well, now they've come up with their fall collection. So I'd probably say now's not the best time to be shopping, mm-hmm. because things are brand new on the racks. We know that when it's brand new on the rack, well, they'll want to wait for a bit and see what's left over, and then they'll discount it. So you never know. You might come across a deal. I'm not saying don't buy anything at all during this season, but it's not the best time to buy. So you'd probably want to hold off for a couple of months unless you really need something. But you're not getting the best price.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is our smart shopping expert, Solmaz McDaddy. When you notice any kind of flaw, Solmaz, let's say, for example, in an item that you might want to purchase, is it worth asking for a discount? Like, let's say, you know, there's some sweater or a hoodie or something, and there's like a marker on the sleeve or something like that, or there's a bit of a tear, or like something that's not over the top, but, you know, should you ask for a discount, and should you ask for a specific discount? Like, I want 15% off or something.
Absolutely. There's only one answer to this question, and it's yes, yes, yes. You always ask for a discount. I've had so many discounts applied just for asking. And if it's something that's not noticeable, and recently bought a lamp, and at the bottom of the lamp, it's glass, and so it's kind of chipped, but nothing that you can notice because the lamp is, it's underneath the lamp, right? So does it bother me? Absolutely not. But I don't think I should be paying the same price as someone that's buying this lamp in perfect condition. So I for sure asked the store manager if there was something that could be done. And they came back and said, well, you know, we'll take $5 off, $5 off. Now, to be fair, the lamp was a $50 lamp, so it's a 10% discount. And I thought, well, you know, is that a fair price for me? Because remember, when you're buying, it's always a negotiation, right? So it's like you're telling me what price is fair to you to sell it to me, but I have a say in that. So is it a fair price? Yes or no? I decided that the stuff was indeed a fair price. I could have contested it. Would he have said yes or no? I felt that it was his final offer. And so that's why I decided to go with it. It took an extra 3 minutes of my day. I asked it with a smile. The answer was yes. You have to be ready for the person to say no. And that's often why people are shy to ask. They think, oh no, you know, I don't want to look cheap, or, you know, what will they think? Well, you know what? Just ask away with a smile, and more often than not, you'll find that they'll say yes and you'll get a discount. I've even gotten discounts with clothing that were a bit dirty. And so, you know, they'll look at you and say, well, you'll get this out and by washing it, no problem, but I'll give you 15% off or something like that. So it's definitely worth to ask.
I think you've actually answered my next question, because I was going to say, how do you go about, you know, asking for deals if it's not, you know, like already marked? And I think you've pretty much said it, like, be nice and probably not aggressive.
Exactly, because if it's something that you want, like that lamp, it was the last lamp, it was the floor model, and so I thought, I'm interested in this lamp, you know, like, what? Go ahead and ask. And that's been part of what I do day to day. Like, I always ask if I see something that's a bit flawed. And keep in mind, like, if it's a flaw, like you mentioned, that is not so noticeable and that you don't mind so much, or perhaps, you know, if it's a clothing and it's a loose button or a missing button and you don't mind going to sew it back on, then it's definitely worth it to ask.
Let's talk now, I guess, about negotiating or haggling. Are there kinds of stores or specific kinds of stores that are willing to negotiate their prices? Like, can you go to a high-end boutique and then go to Walmart and try the same thing, or is it not going to happen?
Definitely. I've been known to negotiate pretty much anywhere. You never know. I think it has to do with the person behind the counter, and you see if they're receptive to it, because they'll often be given maneuvering to say yes for X amount of percentage off. And so whether it's a high-end boutique or, like you mentioned, Walmart, I'm not saying I've never tried negotiating at Walmart, so it might not work, but every type of store, there's a certain negotiating factor. So all depending on what the issue is, a good example of that is what we just mentioned about if there's a defect. Usually stores will prefer to sell it to you at a discount than to keep it on their shelves or to put it into the loss and damaged goods, because then they're not getting anything for it.
Do you have any tips when it comes to, like, haggling? Like, again, you sort of mentioned before, be nice and don't be aggressive. But is haggling sort of different than negotiating? Like, is it the same sort of thing for you? Like, how you would approach that?
Yeah, I guess it is different. I think, you know, I mainly negotiate. So it's just, here is what I'm willing to spend on a product or service. And you might agree, you might disagree. And that is completely fine, because I think that what I'm about to put on the table is as fair as what you want to put on the table, and we find a happy middle. So I'd probably qualify it more as negotiating, and always with a smile. And I mention that because you'd be surprised at the difference it makes when you just ask politely, because oftentimes I'll be turned down politely, and oftentimes might mean 5 out of 10 times. Like it's not to say that you always get it, but it's always worth asking, because I've had witnesses see how we get things, and they think, I would have thought you would have gotten something out of this. But you just ask politely, and maybe they'll throw in extra products or services or an extra warranty or things like that, and so it's totally worth it.
Do you have any final tips that you want to share with us, Solmaz, about sort of where we're at now in the fall? And should people sort of start gearing up for their holiday shopping, like maybe making some lists now and stuff?
Yeah, well, actually, the next big holiday that's about to come up is Canadian Thanksgiving, and in the States, Columbus Day weekend. And that's when you can start getting the first of the good deals, and you'll be able to get fall stuff, and perhaps check things off of your Christmas list if you want to start early. It's always good to start that off, and that way you don't have the stress of the holiday shopping when stores are packed and packed and packed. So I always like to keep a list of people I know I'm going to buy gifts for, and I kind of like listen in to see what they're hoping to get, because they'll often drop cues, right? They won't say, I want this for Christmas or this for a special event. So you kind of pick in, oh, well, I think this could be useful. And so you keep your eye out open on different deals.
Solmaz, as always, you are a rock star. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kelly.
That is our smart shopping expert, Solmaz McDaddy, right here on The Kelly Alexander Show. A big thank you going out to my guests this week, the Angry Kids, Vicky Fraser, Solmaz McDaddy, and Patrick Charles. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Ellen J. Barrier. It is easy to smile in the face of a challenge when we believe in ourselves that we won't back down. Thank you so much for hanging out on the show. We always appreciate your time. Don't forget to check out all of our social media, including all of our YouTube videos that have our interviews and other segments. Lots of cool stuff. YouTube.com/KellyAlexanderShow. Of course, our Twitter account, @KAlexanderShow, and our Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show. Have a great week. Any comments or questions, drop me a line, Kelly@KellyAlexanderShow.com.